on the Hard Rocker Sports Network from K-Tech 91.3. This is Hard Rocker Huddle, your podcast home for South Dakota Mines Athletics.
Hello, my name is Josh Van Valkenburg-Gernert. This is the March 14th edition of the Hard Rocker Huddle. Today we're doing things a bit different. Our first guest today is going to be Becca Rye, a Hard Rocker athletic trainer, to talk a little bit about Athletic Training Month. And then later on in the show, we're going to bring in head men's basketball coach Eric Glenn. Thanks for joining us today, Becca. Let's kind of just start out by talking about, you know, what does Athletic Training Month mean overall? What does it mean for you? And what do you think the purpose of it is?
Our scopes of practice and showing appreciation for all athletic trainers out there. So this year, the kind of slogan for Athletic Training Month is providing healthcare everywhere. So showing that athletic trainers don't just work in schools and pro athletics, but we also can work in the military, performing arts, industrial settings. So that's pretty cool to kind of show. And then for me as an athletic trainer, I think Athletic Training Month is really important to, as us as athletic trainers, to appreciate each other if we're not getting that from others in the settings that we work in. So it's just kind of coming together and showing support for each other, too.
Sure, yeah. And you kind of mentioned in some of the other settings athletic training is. I wasn't really aware of this until I talked to Caleb last week that, you know, athletic training's gotten into middle schools. It's gotten into, you know, like Amazon, like regular companies, mm-hmm. you know, even, you know, like police departments and all kinds of stuff. So what do you think has been the main, you know, reason why it's grown so much?
I think we're just realizing, I guess everyone's realizing the wide scope of practice that athletic trainers can have and the wide variety of skills that we can have. So we already have been providing injury evaluation and prevention, care and prevention in schools like it has been for a while. But other companies realizing that they need that for their workers too in order to reduce injury rates, especially for those hard labor jobs, so they can keep their employees working and not have to pay, you know, comp and things like that. So,
sure. And yeah, I think there's definitely a difference between what the average person thinks athletic trainers do and what you actually do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they see you doing things like taping. And when a player gets hurt, they see that you, an athletic trainer, run out there on TV. But can you maybe talk a little bit about some of the things that, you know, obviously the department relies on you for a lot more than that. So can you talk maybe what an average day looks like that somebody wouldn't see?
Yeah. So kind of a typical day for me as an athletic trainer here is to have a few morning hours. Usually I'm in at 9 or 10 to see athletes for new injury evaluations, anything that they had go on the previous day, or they're coming in for their daily treatments and rehabs. That's kind of like our individualized time with those athletes in the morning. And then take a quick lunch. And then after lunch, I'm pretty much here the entire afternoon from around 1 to 7 p.m. Covering practices that go on, also continuing treatments and rehabs and any evaluations that occur that for injuries that occur that day too. So it's kind of a wide variety of things. Usually the end of the day, I save about an hour for paperwork. I don't really want to be sitting at my desk all day. So that's kind of one thing I love about my job here is I get to be up and about and moving around all day. So
then how does that day kind of change if you're doing an in-season sport and you're hosting a game?
Yep. Night? So game days are a little bit different. Usually we still kind of have that morning treatment rehab time. And then maybe if it's a night game, we'll have a bigger gap in the afternoon. And then we'll schedule a pregame treatment time to help the athletes warm up, get whatever the treatments they're used to getting. Any tapings that need to be done pregame will be done at that time. And then we get set up for the game and we keep on rolling. So,
Yeah, and part of what NADA does, your association, is they really help, obviously, in that growth, but they've also tried to inform the public a little bit more that there is a lot more to it than what they realize. How important do you think that having an organization is that like that is for for you?
I think it's really important just to kind of have some more powerful people behind you and have your back as an athletic trainer, and set guidelines and set policies and protocols and things like that as far as administratively too. And then every year, usually minus COVID, there's a National Athletic Trainers Association yearly convention. And so that is hosted in different cities in the U.S. and that kind of just brings athletic trainers to a certain city, and we're kind of bringing our profession to those different areas too.
Sure. We kind of already talked a little bit about the growth of athletic training compared to, 10, 15 years ago. Part of that too is that there's so many different trends and so many different things to keep up with. Obviously, compared to 10, 15 years ago, concussions were, we've come a long ways with dealing with concussions and the mental health kind of stuff. So how important is it to keep up with those trends and keep yourself educated along with just being able to treat for new things or more emphasized things?
Yeah, it's really important. I was always taught in school, evidence-based practice. You have to do your research and practice based on the evidence that's available in the research. So that's really important just to continue learning. And the National Athletic Trainers Association provides that standard of you having to continue your education and get credits for that continuing education in order to keep your license as an athletic trainer. So I think that's a little bit extra motivation to continue researching, but I think it's also, you're right, the field is growing and we're having to pay attention to more mental health situations or be a little bit more cautious with concussions and things like that and more preventative with other types of injuries. So, yeah, if we weren't doing research, we would be where we are. We're 20 years ago, so.
And then a little bit more personally, how did you, what drew you into being interested in athletic training, and what was kind of like, what was your process? Did you go to school for kinesiology, or what did that look like?
Mm-hmm. So I was a runner in middle school and high school. I ran cross country and track, and really into high school, I was kind of getting these small chronic injuries, aches and pains, and I had no idea. We didn't have an athletic trainer at our high school. I didn't know what they were, what they did, but I wanted to be the problem solver for my own pains and my teammates. So kind of what I started to look at was PT, because PT, physical therapy, was more well known. And so I did a few job shadow observations and things like that. And I was in a PT clinic working with a physical therapist and an elderly man who just got a surgery. He was very slow moving. We had to be very patient. And on the other side of the room, I saw someone else working with a younger person. They were doing more athletic movements. They were doing jumping and agility. And I said, I kind of want to do that instead. So I looked into what else there was and found athletic training. And that's kind of how I decided I wanted to do that. So after high school, I went to South Dakota State for athletic training as an undergrad. And then really just wanted to dive into the research a little bit more. So I went to grad school at North Dakota State for advanced athletic training to learn some advanced techniques to do a little bit more research base. And that really kind of helped me start my career. So,
sure. And you've been here for a couple of years now, I believe. What was kind of the start of your career? You mentioned your schooling. Where did you go when you first graduated, or what was your first job?
Yep. So at North Dakota State, I was a graduate assistant athletic trainer. So I got a small stipend for working for them with their track and field teams for 2 years. And then after NDSU, I went to Valley City State University, which is a small NAIA school in Valley City, North Dakota. And we just because it was such a small school, I worked with a little bit of all of the sports. Everyone helped out with everyone. So I spent my next 4 years there and then came down here to Mines.
Sure. What do you feel like? Do you think, obviously being at a smaller school and covering all those sports, do you think it's more of a benefit to kind of do it the way we do it here, where each of you kind of has two sports, kind of stick to your one in-season sport? Do you think that's helpful just in general?
It is if you have a larger student-athlete population or more sports in general. It's really nice to be able to focus on your one sport that's in season. But I think being at the smaller school, it built my confidence a little and also just my interpersonal skills to be able to work with all of the athletes, even though they weren't my specific sport. So it was kind of a learning curve in that aspect as well.
Sure. And the last thing I have for you today is, do you have any, you know, pieces of advice for people who are maybe interested in athletic training but aren't sure they want to go that route yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just do the research you can and get on to National Athletic Trainers Association and AT Cares and all of those websites that promote athletic training to really learn about it instead of just Googling. And then reach out to, you know, athletic trainers in the schools nearby and reach out to athletic trainers that work in the clinics nearby and really get kind of firsthand experience from them. And they can also kind of share why athletic training is so great. So,
all right, sure. Thank you so much, Becca.
Thank you.
All right, our second guest today is head men's basketball coach at South Dakota Mines, Eric Glenn. First, let's kind of get started just by talking a little bit about, I know you were native of Riverton, Wyoming, but you grew up in Hot Springs. What was it kind of like growing up there, your siblings and family life?
Yeah, I actually say it the other way around. I'm a native of Hot Springs and from Riverton, Wyoming. So we want to get that correct. But, I'm a product of two school teachers. My dad was also a coach. He coached high school football and also coached track and some basketball. But, you know, his passion was definitely in football. Both my parents came out of college from Chatham State to Hot Springs. And I was two when we moved there and lived in Hot Springs for 12 years. And obviously really enjoyed my youth growing up there. Hot Springs is a great town to be a kid in. Lots of great things to do. You know, you run around on your bike everywhere and everybody knows who you are. So you kind of basically can just have the whole town to yourself. So it was kind of a nice place to grow up as a kid. Moved on to Riverton, Wyoming for my high school years, which was, really a good move, you know, for me. I think when I look back now, is everything, every place has a, you know, some type of building block of who you are and who you become. And Riverton was definitely a great stop for me. A lot of very influential people in the coaching ranks that I think about who've helped develop my philosophies and coaching style and just overall relationships with players and stuff come from a lot of the coaches that I had along the way. And at that time, you know, Riverton had some really influential people in the basketball world and for the state of Wyoming. And so it was really a neat time to be in Riverton. And the other side of it is that, you know, Riverton was just coming out of a boom from the uranium and gas wells and stuff. And so I was able to move in at a time when the high school was brand new and it just, the infrastructure of everything was just really brand new there and very nice. And so it was just kind of a cool time to be in Riverton, Wyoming.
Sure. And I know your dad also coached football. So you maybe got into sports a little bit younger than the average person. When did you kind of start playing and get involved in sports?
You know, we didn't really, you know, compared to today's day and age, we didn't have all the travel teams and all those kind of stuff. So. But I mean, I was into sports as long as back as I can remember. It was just always obviously a fabric of our family, something that we were obviously always into. Football, I would say, has always really probably always been my biggest passion. I've always liked basketball and football, kind of 1A and 1B. But obviously, being in a football family, football was really high up there. And You know, the Friday nights of high school football, I don't know if there's anything better, you know, just getting the lights on, the community, you know, of course, growing up in this community like Hot Springs, who really supported the teams really well. And at that time, there was just, you know, Hot Springs was a really thriving community with the VA was going strong at that time. And there were just some great community members that really supported high school athletics. And it was just really a great atmosphere to be a part of. And obviously, my dad had some good teams and got to coach a state title there with Larry Ireland. And so it was just fun. And, you know, just some great memories of just hanging out at the fields, whether it's for practices all the way. Even got left there a couple times. Dad forgot I was even there, but had to walk home and things because, you know, you just get lost of, I guess, just of the aura of just being a part of that. And just a lot of fun. And, you know, had some great friends. We would get up on Saturday mornings, have our own little pickup games. And, you know, there was about 22 or 23, 24 of us that would get it there. Back then, you know, you could order your own NFL football things out of the Sears catalog, and everybody had their own favorite teams, and we'd be out there playing. So it was again just a really cool time. I really enjoyed my childhood there.
Yeah, and kind of going back into a little bit more of the sports aspect, obviously you played football and basketball. Did you play any other sports at a young age, or was it pretty
I tried to do everything. You know, I just had a passion for sports all the way around. Now, I wasn't good at everything, but I loved to play it all. You know, we had a little league baseball, you know, we did basketball, we did football, I wrestled, you know, track was something we didn't, you know, even did some, I guess we did some Hershey track meets. I can remember going to some of those in Pierre. And, so, yeah, I mean, I just really loved to do everything. And I think a lot of that was just because my dad coached at that time, everything, you know, he was head football coach. He coached the seventh grade basketball team, and then he coached the weights, in track. And so, you know, he was just involved. And then at that time, you know, both my parents played summer softball. So it was just like, oh, you know, when I got a chance to play baseball, it was again just, I think it's just emulating what my parents did and knowing that they were active and stuff. And so, you know, but I just loved doing everything. And, you know, it's unfortunately, as you got older, you had to choose a few sports here and there. You know, do it all over again. I'd do them all again.
Yeah, and then going into high school, obviously the focus was football, basketball. Do you have any – I mean, what kind of success did you guys have as a team in high school and individually?
Well, we were we had a class. We weren't very big. Our center, by the time we were seniors, was only about 6'2", maybe 6'3". So we were a pretty small group, but we had some really good athletes. And I wasn't necessarily really athletic at that time. I was kind of a late bloomer, so – you know, they would – I had a guy, coach, tell me one time. He said, Glenn, you're not slow. You just stay in the same spot too long. So, you know, that's that was me in high school a little bit. But, you know, I was skilled and I could shoot it. And so when my body finally caught up with all that in college, that's when I really started to take off. But, you know, overall, our team, you know, I had another guard with me named Matt Shoot. He actually – him and I both got into officiating while we were in high school, and he's continued on doing that where he's done Big Sky games and stuff like that. And he's a realtor up in Bozeman, Montana. Played with a guy named Ben Gose, who was the fastest guy in the state. He won the 1, 2, 4, and 800 his junior year in the largest class in Wyoming. Ended up running at the University of Texas. And then I believe he went to an Ivy League school, and it escapes me which school he went to out there. You know, Cyril Stauffenberg was our center. He's been the girls basketball coach or women's basketball coach at Dickinson State up in North Dakota, Central Wyoming College, and now is the head girls coach at Lander Valley. I think they just played for a state title this weekend, matter of fact, in Wyoming. So, you know, just really had a lot of guys just always played a lot of different sports. We had a lot of multi-sport guys out there, and, you know, football-wise, again, our size, we weren't real big, but we did have some speed, and we were okay. And then basketball, you know, our junior year, we didn't even make it to state. And then I think that we really surprised a lot of people our senior year when we really came together as a team and played really well together and just beat a lot of teams who were bigger than us. And I think that we surprised a lot of people that year. And it was fun.
And then kind of going into your college days, obviously recruiting was not as big then. It really didn't blow up until the last 10 years. But what was kind of your recruiting process?
Yeah, obviously you don't have the social media aspect of it, which I think has really changed the recruiting landscape. So, you know, for us, though, you know, you still went on visits and things like that. Me and a buddy of mine from Lander, our dads played together at Shatterin, Tim Colgate. Him and I loaded him in the car, and we went and visited. I was at Shatterin. He actually went to Black Hills. I did not go to Black Hills. I at a young age, I learned to have a dislike for the Yellow Jackets, I guess. But tongue-in-cheek, of course. But I did that in Sioux Falls College, which is now University of Sioux Falls. And, you know, for me, I was looking for a place that would allow me to play both football and basketball. I wasn't heavily recruited. Honestly, statistically, my stats for basketball were better probably for that sport than they were for football. But I got recruited more for football. Obviously, football is a numbers game. So I think that had something to do with it. And had scholarship offers from both Shatterin and University of Sioux Falls. And it eventually chose Shatterin. I think a lot of it was just proximity to my folks and, you know, just being able to be closer to them. At that time, they were in Riverton, but when I was a junior, they ended up moving to Douglas, Wyoming, so that just made it even better. It's where they're closer. You know, it ended up being a great decision for me. I really enjoyed my time at Shatterin. I think it was the perfect fit for me, things turned out pretty well.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned trying to play football. I believe you played football for 2 years.
I did.
Correct.
Yeah, you know, I went into Shatterin. I was one of nine quarterbacks my freshman year, and I was probably number nine coming in, to be quite honest. And there was a couple upperclassmen, and then I think there was four or five freshmen that came in, and I started out kind of slow. And we came up actually here at the School of Mines and played in a kind of a JV type game. And I really played well. I want to say I think I had like three touchdowns and threw for over 300 yards and just had a really, really good game. And from that point on, I moved up from number nine to number three. And got to go on the travel team from that point on and still redshirted, but was still traveling and stuff and traveled for the rest of the year after that moment. So I think that was, for me, you know, again, like I said, I was kind of a late bloomer too. And somewhere between my start of my freshman year and my sophomore year, all of a sudden I developed some speed. Basically went from basically just over a 5.140 to a 4.840, which is a pretty big jump. And so, you know, just honestly, just maturity, a little bit of body just changing. And then, of course, you know, working hard helped too. But I think for me, it was just, you know, just Mother Nature to kind of finally catching up with me. And when I started developing that speed and more quickness and just even some jumping, all of a sudden I could jump, I could grab, you know, I could dunk it a little bit. So it was, I never really got a dunk in a game, but for a 6 foot guy, it was not too bad. And it was just, yeah, just those, all of a sudden those things started coming together. And I just, you know, I was definitely a developmental guy. And was it after the end of my sophomore year, you know, my college coach just said, hey, you know, we had started making the playoffs in football at Shatterin, really start having some good teams. And I was still a part of that. But I wasn't able to start basketball till December because the playoffs were running so deep. And, you know, at that time we were NAI at Shatterin. So, you know, the basketball team had been going since October 1st. So I'm missing 2 months of basketball. And I do remember like my sophomore year coming, you know, my first game, I think was at Black Hills. I got into and, I just felt like I was in molasses, you know, I was just behind everybody and you could just, it just was an awful feeling. And, you know, and I just played catch up the rest of the year. And by the end of my sophomore year, though, I kind of caught up and started playing pretty well. And at the end of the year, my coach sat me down and just said, you know, listen, you're gonna have to make a decision. I'd love to have you on the basketball side. And on the football side, you know, I was backing up a guy by the name of Stu Perez, who was just a heck of a quarterback at that time for Shatterin and was basically breaking all the records. And honestly, probably was not going to beat him out. And so I think the it was not that hard of a decision. And so, you know, they kind of picked up my scholarship from football side and then some, and worked out pretty good that way. And I ended up playing basketball my final 2 years there.
Yeah, what were those last kind of 2 years like? Did you really see a noticeable difference just in having those extra 2 months?
For me individually, a huge, huge difference. Being able to come in and obviously all fall and just focusing on one sport, it's, you know, I mean, I say I did two sports, but I wasn't like a Bo Jackson. You know, I didn't have that kind of athletic ability, and, you know, I had a lot of grit, and I worked hard and stuff, but eventually that only takes you so far. And especially in basketball, in a game like that, where, you know, your skill and just the overall feel for the game, it takes some time. And, you know, I wasn't able to overcome that. And so it was just a really good move for me. And just to be, to come in right out with everybody else and stuff. Yeah. I got to get off to a great start, and I just had really two fantastic, years for me. I felt like my junior and senior year. And then from a team standpoint, we did too. You know, we joined the RMAC for the first time my junior year, and that's when all the RMAC schools were going from NAI to Division II. So everybody was in transition. So we all still played NAI championships, but we were a D2 league at that time. And our freshman year, my junior year, we struggled a little bit in conference, and. But we were still good enough to make it to the playoffs in NAI, and then we ended up making it quite a ways in the playoffs, in the NAI playoffs. And then our next year, but we had everybody back. We were all juniors. We didn't have any seniors really off that squad. So we all came back that next year, and our senior year, we had a really fantastic year. We played for the conference championship in the tournament in the RMAC, and then we made it to the district finals and lost to Concordia, Nebraska, who was a Final Four team that year. So, you know, really no shame in losing to them on their home floor nonetheless. So it was good. It was, you know, again, I played with some fantastic players. You know, I believe, what did I play? I played with four basically Hall of Famers. You know, one of them is Josh Robinson, who still, you know, still holds all-time scoring leader there at Shatter. And that's held on now, I guess. Now it's been almost 30 years. And, you know, and he was a post. You know, he didn't even shoot the three. And so, you know, it's hard to believe that no one with the three-pointer has been able to break his record yet down there. And then his brother Jason, who is a fantastic player. He was 2 years younger than me, as well as Russ Crafton and J.J. Federson. And those guys were all just really good, fantastic scorers and players. And those three guys were 2 years younger. And I got to actually be a part as a coaching those guys as I stayed on as a GA. And actually we won the RMAC their senior year. And they were just a really, really good group. And, of course, we had some other guys in that class that were good players also. But we had three of the best guards in the league, and it was those three guys.
Yeah, so you obviously going to Shatterin and then coaching at Shatterin, you had some pretty good team success.
Yeah.
What are some of those – what does that mean to you,
now? Well, you know, the thing is, I didn't even know I was going to – I never really thought about coaching in college. I honestly thought that – when I quit playing football, the high school coach there, Dick Stein at Shatterin High, I had known for a long time. He had coached against my dad when we were in Hot Springs, so he'd been through there the whole time and knew my dad, and asked me to come over and help out and coach in the fall. And that was what was my football fix once I didn't play football anymore. And got to go over to the high school side and coach. And I just had a blast doing that. And of course, we had good teams, and that helped too. And so I got to do that with him. And I just thought, you know, I'm gonna get my business education degree. I'm going to go teach business in high school and become and I wanted to be a football coach, high school football coach. I just really, like I said, there's just something about the Friday nights and all those things like I talked about that I still just really kind of had a kind of romance with that I just always enjoyed. And after my I had one more year of school after I got done playing to do my student teaching, and actually got it at Shatterin High. And I was coached football there, and then I also coached the freshman girls basketball team there. And I just thought, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. And after I got done, Coach Wood, my college basketball coach, approached me and said, hey, I think we're going to get a GA spot here, and I want you to come in GA. And I think probably one of the reasons why I fit it, because the GA was going to still be split between football and basketball. So I ended up coaching football on the college side there at Chatham State for that first year, and then I also coached basketball. And when I got into that, that really kind of changed what I thought I wanted to do. And when I got into coaching college basketball, I thought, yeah, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life right here. And from that point on, I did every, you know, I called a guy by the name of Rick Samuels, who went to college with my dad at Chatham. He played at Chatham. His dad was the, he was from Laramie, Wyoming originally, but he played at Chatham State and was at that time the head coach at Eastern Illinois University. And I just gave him a call just for to say, hey, this is what I want to do. How do I do what you're doing? And he gave me some great advice and some things I needed to do because I was way off what I thought I needed to do. And so I just took his advice. And one of the main things was just get out and start working camps and network and get to know people. And so that's what I did. I basically, you know, I just was calling people like at Colorado State and Montana State all along the Front Range that was close there. And I just tried to work a camp every week that I could. And quite honestly, Wyoming at the time was going through a coaching change, and Joby Wright was the head coach there, just became the head coach there, and they had a new staff, and they started scrambling for their camps and happened to call the former basketball, or the, at that time was the current basketball coach at Douglas High, Rich Yeaman, and Rich called me up and said, hey, do you want to work Wyoming's camp? And I said, sure, absolutely. And so I went down there and worked, and as I was there, what I would try to do is that I would talk to the staffs and just say, hey, when camp is over, I'd like to stick around for a couple days, just follow you guys around, kind of like a job shadow type thing, and just see what you guys do and how you do it. You know, Colorado State was always really good about that. Randy Ray, Don Verlin, we were a couple of guys. Randy's now the head coach at Weber State, and Don Verlin was at Idaho here just recently. Just great guys allowed. And then at Wyoming at that time was Coach Purcell and Joe Abunasar, who runs IMG Academy now, or not IMG Academy. The Impact Academy in Vegas. And so they all let me kind of hang around there, and I actually stayed at Joe's house, and we just kind of stayed on, and I got into their files and film and everything. It was just a great learning experience. And what I didn't know is that I was actually, at that time, is basically like a job interview, you know. And so, you know, I come back a second year and worked at Wyoming. And, you know, it was just one of those things where they had an assistant's job open, and I didn't even apply for it. I just knew that, kind of what they were looking for at the time. I didn't really fit that. I didn't fit the experience and stuff. But I, you know, just worked hard at their camps and things. And I'm working in the middle of camp. I'm doing some drills. And Joby Wright comes up and says, hey, I need to talk to you, right in the middle of camp. And so I kind of leave my guys that I have at the basket. And he says, hey, I want to hire you for my assistant's job. And I was just totally blown away. And I said, absolutely. He goes, well, when can you be here? I said, I need to run home and grab a U-Haul, and I'll be back in 24 hours. So that's what I did. Went and got my grandpa's truck, got a U-Haul trailer, and moved to Laramie, Wyoming.
Yeah, obviously, Joby Wright, that has to be a heck of a first, a person to learn from, you know, coming from Indiana, coming from the Bob Knight coaching.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big eye-opener for me, obviously, coming from Chatham State. You know, not to dismiss anything that we did at Chatham, but, you know, it's a pretty big jump to go from Chatham State to University of Wyoming. And like you said, a kind of a bigger-than-life personality of Joby Wright, who you know, was on the staff there for 15 years under Bob Knight, played at Indiana. I want to say that he was the first African-American to play in the Big Ten. He's just and he's a big man. I mean, he's just a big figure. He, you know, his personality fills a room, and you know, you shake hands with him, his hands just swallow your hand. I mean, he just, yeah, kind of an intimidating situation. So yeah, obviously was just very appreciative of the opportunity, and you know, and just two really great experiences. We had great guys to coach. absolutely, you know, I still run into some of them. One of them more than the most is Chris Haslam, who coaches up at Montana State now. He was a post player of ours. But, and, you know, and just being some fan, you know, my very first funny story probably for me is that, you know, my very first college experience at the Division I level for games is that we played at, I think they were number two or three in the nation. It was Cincinnati. So you got Bob Huggins, you know, who's just obviously everybody knows who Bob Huggins is. You know, Will Fortner was one of their players. Another guy, Art Long, who, you know, had just gotten out of a little bit of trouble. I believe he punched a police horse or something like that. And, you know, it's just huge. And then you're going to Cincinnati, you know, the Big O and stuff. And you know he's always notorious for being at all the games and stuff. And sure enough, here we are sitting at the bench, and right across from us is Oscar Robinson. And just, you know, for a guy coming from Riverton, Wyoming, and really hadn't been out of the Rocky Mountain Range area, and to go to a place like that is it was definitely intimidating, to say the least, but just really cool at the same time. And so, and we had the year before, we'd played Cincinnati really close at the AA, and thought, hey, we can come in here and compete, and they just blew our doors off. We were down probably 45 or something like that, and the game's basically over, and I'm sitting there next to Chris Haslam, and Chris has a great personality. He's from England, and just has a little accent to him and stuff, and he, you know, and here I am looking across, and I'm going, great, my first Division I game I'm coaching in, we're getting blasted, Oscar Robinson sitting across the court and stuff, and Chris looks down and says, hey, coach, and his English accent says, welcome to Division I basketball. So it was, it did get better after that, but that was my first game at Wyoming.
Yeah, a little bit of definitely some star struck a little bit there with,
yes,
Oscar Robertson. Can't blame you there. After Wyoming, I believe you went back down to the high school level then at Scotts Bluff.
Yeah, you know, afterwards at Wyoming, you know, wanted to stay into college and was working on a couple things. And a former Riverton guy I didn't go to school with was older than me, named Tony Holt, was the head basketball coach at at Scotts Bluff. And he called up and said, hey, you know, we're going to have a marketing job open up in our marketing department here, teaching marketing 1 and 2. And then I'd like you to come coach with me here. And I was going to coach their sophomore team and then help with the varsity team. And, you know, and at that time I thought, well, I want to stay in the college and stuff. And then, you know, my grandfather, who I used to spend my summers with on his ranch and farmed south of Scotts Bluff there, was not doing well health-wise. And I thought, you know what, I think maybe God just give me an opportunity to be able to see my grandfather during his last year, couple years. And as it turned out, it was his last year of life. And I just think it was just something that happened, you know, a little divine intervention of opening a door saying, hey, you know, this is where you need to be for this next year. And so I got married, obviously, that year. And my wife and I moved to Scotts Bluff then, and ended up taking that job and coaching for a year there. And it was a great year. You know, we had a really good, you know, I had a bunch of fun sophomores to coach and had a blast doing that. And then on the varsity side, you know, we won the B district there in that area and ended up going to state, and just had a really fun year coaching those guys, and still run to a lot of those guys down there. One of them actually married a cousin of mine, and he's the superintendent now, too, of schools there, which is kind of funny how far that makes me feel old thinking about that. But, you know, that was a fun year. But like I said, my grandfather passed away. I was able to be there for my grandmother and stuff as well. After that year, my grandmother ended up moving to Douglas with my folks. And I kind of just started getting that itch to get back to college again. So, yeah.
You mentioned a couple times now that really you thought college was your passion over high school. Mm-hmm. What did you feel were the main things that were pushing you to college as opposed to?
You know, I just think it's just the fact that you just really get to focus in on that. You know, when you're in high school, you're getting pulled in a lot of different directions. And you do at small college basketball too, but it's not quite the same. You know, you definitely have a strong focus on the basketball side. And, you know, so I think that was probably the biggest thing with that. I do like the college, you know, and I didn't mind the high school age kids. I think kids are kids, but there's just something about having, you know, in high school, you don't necessarily have 12 guys that all have a passion for basketball. And in college, that's what you hope you have is 12 guys that, you know, 12 to 15 guys that, you know, that's their passion too. And so to just really be able to reach, you know, high levels of play, when you have that many guys that are really have a passion for your sport.
Sure. And then after Scotts Bluff, you were able to get back to that level again. First, I believe you were an assistant at Missouri Valley College, and then yep. a couple years later, you became the head coach.
Yeah, just, you know, just started applying for jobs again. And, you know, college sports is, you know, especially basketball is – you know, I didn't know if I'd ever get back into it again because once you're out, boy, it's really hard to get back in. And again, you know, I just think that someone upstairs was looking out for me and applied to a lot of places, got a couple interviews and stuff. And I was looking for the right fit too. I knew after Wyoming, and not that I didn't enjoy Wyoming and stuff, I just knew that from a lifestyle standpoint, that Division I was probably not something that I wanted to do. When you go to the smaller college levels, there is a little bit more of a balance of life with that. And I knew that's something. And I grew up, you know, that's what I played at. I understood that. And I think I just was looking for something like that, that, you know, I still wanted to be able to be a husband and a father. And I think that's really hard to do at the Division I level. There's some guys that pull it off, and kudos to them and their wives, obviously, that really sacrifice a lot. And even at this level, you know, my wife and kids sacrifice quite a bit for me to be able to continue to do this, but not really at the same level as at the Division I's. You know, they do get to see me in July, you know, and if I'd have stayed at the Division I level, I mean, basically July, they wouldn't see me at all. And then, of course, the seasons are even more so. So, yeah, so that it was just out of blind. I just was throwing out resumes anywhere I could. I was kind of hoping maybe to find something. I know one of the things a buddy of mine gave me some advice on was like, hey, you know, you need to get some place where you can kind of develop some roots and a recruiting base at a you know, a big metropolitan area, and you know, whether it's be Chicago or, you know, Dallas or something like that. And so I was kind of hoping for maybe to find a place where I could go somewhere where I hadn't been before and develop some new contacts that way. And out of the blue was Tom Pfeiffer from Missouri Valley College, who was the athletic director and basketball coach at that time, called me out for an interview to Marshall, Missouri, which I'd never had a clue where Marshall, Missouri was. Had never even been to Missouri myself, even though I technically had some relation out that way on my dad's side. And heard of some things like more Independence area in the Kansas City area, obviously. But so, yeah, it was here my wife and I loaded up and went to an interview out there to Marshall, Missouri. And, you know, it just really right away when I got there, I was like, yeah, this is the place I want to be at, because it just had a feel, you know, reminded me of Shattern, and just I think there was just a comfort level there. And it just was like what I was looking for in a small college. You know, the town was a good site, you know, it was about 15,000 people, but it just felt like a close knit town and stuff. So it was just a really neat place, and got offered the job, and we took it and ended up moving to Marshall.
A little bit ago, you kind of mentioned the difference between balance of life between D1 and D2. Maybe this is more of a football thing, but in addition to that, some of those coaches at D1, you kind of almost take out the coaching aspect and become more of a CEO too.
Yeah, I think that is more of a football thing, especially a head coach with that. I think your coordinators are more hands-on with that. You know, I mean, back when I grew up, I think a lot of the head coaches were still pretty hands-on. You know, I think I'm a Husker fan, you know, and Tom Osborne for the longest time, you know, he was the offensive coordinator and head coach, and that's just pretty much unheard of anymore.
Yeah.
So from a basketball standpoint, you know, I think when you're talking about your Power 5 conferences, I think that is like that because it's all about recruiting. And, you know, I think that they're just recruit. And I think it's really hard for those guys at that level to also be the coaches So I think they have to have a really strong assistant that can do that. So at the small college level, you do it all. Obviously, recruiting is the lifeblood for everybody still. But you know, you got to find that balance and be able to do that and still coach the game. And I do, that's, you know, I had opportunities to go work for my buddy, Joe Bunasar, who's, like I said, runs Impact Academy. And you know, his thing is all about working out NBA guys and constantly working out NBA guys and individual workouts and all those kind of things. And that would have been obviously really neat to be around some really amazing players and stuff. And I got to go help him sometimes, but I never did it full time with him. I just really enjoy, I think, the process that you go through as a coach at a college basketball program. Sure. You know, I really enjoy the development of it. I do enjoy doing the workouts in the spring and the falls. But then, of course, you know, I do enjoy, you know, the preparation of the games and being able to do all those type of things as well. So, and that's something you don't get to do if you're just a trainer. Sure. And so, yeah, that's probably where I have my hands in all of it. I think in the ever changing, you know, it's a dynamic profession. You know, there's never a dull moment. Every day is a new day. There's always something new popping up and some new challenge to go after. And, you know, I do enjoy just having your guys, you know, and trying to work for something special.
Sure. And part of it, like an Impact Academy, is you're not really making a connection with those kids because they're kind of in and out.
Well,
at a college, kids are there for 4 or 5 years.
I don't want to say you don't. I mean, Joe has some great relationships with some guys. You know, this, you know, the things he talks about, all of his stories are centered around his guys that he works out and their families, and, you know, and he still builds great relationships. And I think to be successful what he's doing, and that's why he's been able to do it, because there's so many people out there now that are trying to do what he does, and he was one of the first guys to really get started. And it's funny because he just basically started. It's crazy how he did it, and it's all a testament of him being just such a relational guy. And it all started with Chauncey Billups for him. You know, when we got done at Wyoming, you know, told Chauncey that when Chauncey just got drafted, said, "Hey, you know, I'd like to run your camps for you, and then I'd like to, you know, be your trainer." And of course, Joe didn't have any experience as a trainer, but proved that, you know, he was a 5-star guy. He knew how to run camps and stuff. And so Chauncey let him run his camps, but didn't let him be a trainer. And after Chauncey's first year in the NBA, Joe kind of approached him again and said, "Hey, you know, let me just give me a chance here." And so Chauncey did, and basically changed Chauncey as a player. You know, just his body, his strength, and really got him to buy into nutrition. Joe is a huge nutrition guy. And he's to the tilt. I mean, he would tease me all the time. I'd get a grilled chicken sandwich trying to be healthy, but then I'd slap on a bunch of mayonnaise and he would just give me crap about it. But, you know, he just is fantastic in those areas and Chauncey was just blown away and obviously had just automatically became one of the top guards in the NBA because of it. And then all of a sudden by word of mouth, next thing you know, he's training Kevin Garnett and this list just goes on and which was just great for him. So I was really happy for him. But again, it's not, I guess going back to what you were saying is that I think it is, it's just different. Sure. You know, but, it all depends on the person. I mean, you have to be successful. You know, you got to know how to build relationships and get people to trust you and stuff. And he does that really, really well.
Sure. So back to kind of your next stop after Missouri Valley College, I believe, did you just want to be a little bit back closer to home again with
Black
Hill State?
You know, first, you know, I got a chance to be the head coach there for 2 years. Then after my second year, you know, we had our first kid, which was Jarek, my oldest son, who's now at USD running track and cross country and studying biology. And, you know, it was just, again, one of those things, I think, that, you know, here you are. You know, and that's where my path is not probably one that everybody gets a chance to do. Generally in college, you have to go where the job takes you. And I was a little stubborn, like, no, I want my cake and eat it too type mentality of I want to be able to coach, but I want to be able to coach close to home. You know, as my wife told me, she goes, you know, don't you want your kids to know their grandparents? And it was like, yeah, we do. And so, you know, at that time when I was at Missouri Valley as the head coach, I was also on the NAI National Tournament Committee. And, oops, turn that off. And so while I was on that committee, of all people, Black Hill State had made the national tournament and was down there. And Mike Krasinski, who was the head coach at that time, I've approached him and just kind of start just a simple chit chat, you know, hey, you know, used to live in grew up in Hot Springs and stuff and did those kind of things. And so, you know, just to talk and just kind of in passing just said to him, you know, listen, I'd love, you know, for an opportunity to move it back up that way sometime. I said, if you have a opening, you know, I would consider being an assistant again if it meant moving closer to that area up there. And so, you know, as I got after my second year and stuff, you know, ended up talking to him, and he said, yeah, you know, we're going to have an opportunity up here to get you on staff. And it didn't start out as a full-time spot. And so I was doing some student teaching, and fortunately I got a really understanding wife that is a CPA and was able to make enough money for us to survive up here, and because I was not making much. But it was an opportunity to kind of keep my foot in the door and still keep coaching. So I coached there for 2 years at Black Hills with that, and, you know, really very grateful to Mike to give me that opportunity to come back in. So, and, you know, as I was doing that, Jason Henry was the assistant under Hugh Welsh at the time here. So we're playing for the first time against School Mines, and Jason and I are kind of introduced each other for the first time to each other. And so, you know, I'd basically lived in the same house now for, I guess it's been almost 2 years. And I get to talk to him, and we start talking to each other. And all of a sudden he's like, well, you know, where's your kid going to daycare? And I tell him, oh, yeah, I know where that's at. And I'm like, well, how do you know where all these places are? And he's like, well, I live out there too in Somerset. And as we get talking, we find out we live two houses down from each other, and we didn't even know it. So from that point on, you know, we were travel partners. You know, we shared a lot of information and stuff like that. And so I'm probably jumping ahead to you here, but was he when he became the head coach, you know, he just said, hey, would you be interested in coming over? And obviously it was a no-brainer. You know, my wife was working in Rapid. You know, my kid was going to be going to school in Rapid. It was just an opportunity for me, instead of having to travel to Spearfish every day, to be in Rapid. So that's how I ended up at School Mines right there.
Yeah, that was my next question. Beyond, obviously, you kind of mentioned your wife working here. Obviously, your relationship with Jason was a big one, too. What has kept you? I'm sure in the, like, 13 years you were an assistant, you probably could have gotten a head job somewhere else. What was it about South Dakota Mines specifically?
Yeah, you know, I'd interviewed for some jobs, and quite honestly, when I went to interview, I mean, I was really particular. If everything wasn't, for me, it wasn't about just becoming a head coach. Jason gave me a lot of rope to work with as a coach. And so I got to really make a lot of decisions and do a lot of things that, you know, I don't know that a lot of assistant coaches get to do. So I was always really grateful for that. And I was really enjoying my time as an assistant coach. And I did want to be a head coach, but at the same time, I wasn't willing to just go somewhere just for the sake of being a head coach. And so, you know, I was really looking for that ideal spot, and I just didn't find it. You know, I'd gone back to my hometown, Riverton, thought maybe that might be it. It just didn't feel right there. I had a couple other places. Again, after I interviewed, it just didn't feel like the right fit to pull me further away from family and stuff like that. And so, and I was trying to keep it as close as possible. Obviously, in our area, there's just so many schools, and I'd already been at three of them. So, you know, and, or actually four of them, take that back, four of them in that were in the area. So, yeah, it was a situation where, again, I was just looking for the right situation, and come find out that the perfect situation is right here. Sure. For me. And, you know, and I don't, this could be my last job and I'd be fine with that. Who knows what life has planned for you, but I mean, I have no plans of going anywhere else. And I think that, you know, the things that keep me here obviously is the fact that the close proximity to family is a big one. But you know, just the type of guys that we get to coach here, get really spoiled in that aspect, you know, of just great young men and very focused on knowing what they want to do with their lives for the most part. But, you know, go to class, just very responsible, and really allows us as a staff to focus on, you know, the basketball things of running a basketball program. And we still have life moments of things that pop up and stuff, but boy, not to the extent of some of my other stops, yeah. You know. And so just really blessed to be able to say that I coach great young men that are just, and kudos to their parents, you know, just raised really great guys and know how to act and know right from wrong and know how to treat people right.
Yeah, the maturity level and intelligence of the kids, not just basketball, the student athletes we have here is just another level from the other stops I've been at as well. So, then kind of just going into obviously your time here a little bit, year one would have been 18-19. That was a little bit of a down year, and then year two, year three, obviously you qualified for the playoffs both years but didn't get to play during the COVID year, and then had a bunch of guys graduate from 2021.
Well, we've lost 10 guys over the last 2 years that are significant factors in that success that we had. You know, even last year, you know, with Wilfred and Trey, those are two, you know, veteran guys that just number one, just from a leadership standpoint, was unbelievable. I don't know that I've ever seen two guys be able to control a locker room. And when I say control, I don't mean dominate or anything, but just where the locker room just leaned on them so much because we were so young and new. And just to thrive on that opportunity, I was just so impressed by that. And I think that showed, you know, I don't know too many teams that could lose what we lost and still be in the hunt like that, especially when you're looking at just the, some of the roadblocks we do face of building a roster from the academics and stuff, and just and even just location and you know, the sparsity of our population around us and stuff. So, you know, it was just really a neat year. But even going back before that, you know, my very first year as the head coach, you know, we had a good group, but again, it was still an inexperienced group and we just didn't know how to win yet. Lost so many close games and so many opportunities, and it was tough, but yet at the same time, it was still fun. And that's something I think I would reverberate to this year is very comparable to that year. We're very similar in that. This year we just had a tough time figuring out how to win and how to make those plays down the stretch to win. And sometimes that, you know, you got to go through that tough moments like that to learn those things. And I've been here so long, I was telling our team, I've actually been through that with basically four different groups. The previous three, it all turned out with great happy endings for the most part, you know. And so we're hoping that this, the fourth time around, you know, we're going to be able to see that same thing.
Sure. And yeah, a lot of that you mentioned is just youth. Last year you had no seniors, only one upperclassman on the entire roster. So hopefully some of those guys, the Ollies, the Brevins, learn a little bit from that.
Well, you know, I tell you, honestly, those guys played at a very high level. And, you know, their level of improvement is not necessarily going to be probably showing up in their stats. Those three guys put up unbelievable stats, and quite honestly, if we finish in the top eight and stuff, you know, they probably end up on the all conference. At least two of them end up on the all conference team. But the bottom line is, you don't finish in the top eight, you're just not going to get up there. But that's going to be something that, you know, I think they've got some other areas that they can improve upon. It's our next level guys that we need to really improve upon. And so, you know, as I full well told those guys, you know, I don't necessarily recruit to replace guys, but at the same time, they've set the standard. And so when I go out and try to recruit guys, I'm trying to recruit someone who I feel is better than them or is ahead of them and from a talent standpoint, and that's going to just improve everybody all the way around. And so we're going to try to do that. But at the same time, the guys that are in our program, they have quite the upper hand because they understand the system. They understand, you know, what the expectations are and what the standards are. And they get an opportunity to improve as well. And so, you know, if we do our jobs as coaches on a recruiting standpoint and they go through the process of our development, which we've proven has worked, you know, we're going to be able to take that next level guy and bring them up. And when we can do that overall as a team, you know, we've got to become a better defensive team, specifically in the lane. And that's got to just come with better physicality. We got to be a little bit nastier in the lane. We got to be on both sides of the ball. And that's really where we fell off from last year to this year is how well that we performed in the lane. And so, you know, and like I said, Mort was pretty good in that area. You know, I'd still like to see him maybe a couple percentages higher finishing, but still he's at 55%, which is still good. And but, you know, Brevin and all, he got to probably finish a little bit better. And just overall as a team, we just got to be able to do a better job of finishing in there. And then we got to be able to do a better job protecting it. You know, we weren't a rebounding wise, we weren't a terrible rebounding team, but we just need to be a little bit better. You know, I think we ended up a plus 0.3 on the rebounds, and which is good, but we want to be great. So that's where we got to get to. But it's a lot easier to go from good to great than it is from poor to great.
Yep. A little bit ago, you kind of mentioned having two really good leaders in that 2020-21 year that mm-hmm. left. How important is that? And is that something you feel like you can recruit or develop?
Yeah, you know, I think definitely develop. I mean, that's part of being a coach. And you want a room full of leaders, you know. And like I said, generally that's kind of always been, it's been a leadership by committee type deal. Our locker room is, again, when you deal with the type of guys that we deal with, our locker room is a great locker room. I think everybody understands the importance of chemistry. For the most part, we have good humility with these groups. It's still stuff we got to work on. I mean, we're all human and we all have our human characteristics and stuff that do sometimes pull you away from those things. You know, coaches included. I mean, of our core values, we're always preaching them. That's why we got them up in our locker room. We want to be reminded of them every day. And as a coach, I it's good for me to see them as well and remind myself of what we're about and what our message needs to be, and how I just need to be as a coach. And so our guys are the same way. And, you know, I think overall is that, you know, we want our guys to, when they leave here, is to go out and be leaders in whatever it is that they're doing and in their communities, in their jobs, with their families and stuff. So, you know, and everybody is different, you know, and everybody, you know, sometimes people say leader, they're thinking about, you know, the guy who's the rah-rah or get on somebody guy. And that isn't always necessarily the case. Everybody has their own way of showing those leadership characteristics. But, you know, there has to be, you do need to be a person that's in your own way of how to show accountability and to demonstrate that and to be able to call on other people to be accountable and stuff. So that's really, I think, that is something that missed this year with us. And it got better as the year went on, but we still need to improve upon that.
Sure. And then kind of talking just a little bit about how many underclassmen you have and still potentially only having one person leave next year. How do you kind of recruit this year and next year knowing that you just have so many underclassmen right now?
Yeah, well, it's one thing is we did hold off a scholarship because, you know, as great as a year we had 2 years ago, you know, it's not a great feeling when you lose, and probably technically we lost seven to graduation, and an eighth in Damani Hayes obviously transferred to USD, and so we lost to a D1 school on that. But, you know, to have seven guys in a class you know, is really tough. And so we're trying to spread that out in those classes. And that probably hurt us a little bit this year in our depth. And so definitely could have used one more guy with that. You know, and some of that is some of the guys in the program got to be the ones who maybe step up too. But, you know, we probably could have used one more guy just to add to that, to our guard spot specifically. And so that's just kind of – it is what it is. My plan is to try to get those classes balanced out, though, so we don't have, you know, seven guys in 1 year and have to try to replace so much in 1 year. And I think we're going to be able – obviously, we didn't have any seniors this year, but it's hard to bring in a one-year guy at a school like this. So that really wasn't, you know, realistic. We did bring in a couple freshmen, but with COVID, the problem is that they got compounded into last year's freshman class. So now any freshman that we brought in, but they were, that was out of necessity, and we had to bring those guys in. And, you know, in basketball, there is usually some natural attrition. At this school, not as much as other schools, but there usually is, and that has happened a little bit along the way. And so we're close to getting those to where we want them. And so I think this year's a good year to where we could, if we can find a junior college kid that fits, you know, who we are and what we're about, school and basketball wise, that would be great time to bring in a junior college guy this year, maybe two. And then if we could get a freshman to come in this next year, that wouldn't be bad, and start a new class in behind this other freshman class.
Sure, and you kind of already touched on this a little bit, but what do you think just needs to happen to be able to return to RMAC playoffs next year, but not only that, take a step forward and then be a consistent
top four or five? Yeah, I think I just answered that, and the fact that we've got to become more physical team, and we've got to be able to do better. I mean, if you watch the games last night, you know, it's just fantastic for our league. I knew our league did not get a good shake in the national tournament. We have more than two teams that were deserving to be in the regional tournament, and I just think that was an absolute travesty. And that's happened to us more than once. You know, I know we beat Black Hills 2 years ago. They were co-conference champs, and they don't make the national tournament. That's just ridiculous for a conference champion not to make a national tournament. And so, again, it's great that we have two RMAC teams that have gone and are going to be in our regional final. We're showing that this conference, basketball-wise, has really grown. And just the short amount of time that we've been in it, the parity is unbelievable. You know, Colorado Western was the last place team, and I tell you what, there isn't anybody that would want to face them in a playoff scenario. They're just a dynamic offensive team, and they really have improved over the years, and they had arguably one of the best players in the league on their team. And so there's just a lot of parity in this league. We kind of beat up each other now. You know, I know that traditionally people have talked about the RMAC being very top heavy. It's not the case. There used to be a lot of haves and have-nots. The have-nots have improved their facilities. They have improved their scholarship dollars. It's a totally different league than it was 10 years ago. Sure. And the problem is nobody else has recognized that yet. And I think having Mason, Black Hills, be in that game today is really huge for our league to make a point like, you know, hey, the RMAC is not the same league it was 10 years ago. And with that being said, though, is that if you watch that game, is that the reason that those two teams were able to dominate those Lone Star schools is because we were the more physical teams. We won the lane in both those games as a league. And so that's where we got to get to. You know, we've definitely been trying to increase the size of our guards. That's a big area with that. But it's really more about just the strength and the girth of our guys. We've got to improve in those areas. And that comes with development. You can recruit that to a certain extent, but also, you know, we got to develop that as well.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Coach. That's all I have for you.
All right. Thank you.
That will wrap us up for today. Thank you to Becca and Eric for joining us. This has been the Hard Rocker Huddle. My name is Josh Van Valkenburg-Gernert, signing off.